Now you don't have to do what I did and learn all about Jehovah's Witnesses, every little nook and corner and cranny to help them. Jesus did it in one sentence in Luke 21:8. He said, if they say this and if they say this, don't follow them. That's it. Are you God's prophets? And if that's the best way you check them out, I suggest we look at Deuteronomy 18:21 and let him explain Deuteronomy 18:21. Last week I made an unfortunate remark. I said something about jamming it down their throat. I didn't mean forcing the issue down their throat. I meant that when you're presenting something to them, make sure you don't get off that point until they clearly understand it. I didn't mean to force anything down anyone. But just if we are going to have a serious, honest, true discussion, and we need to have this true discussion because we're all looking for the same thing. In fact, brothers, we're all in the same boat. Your life's at stake and my life's at stake. If you're a prophet of God, then I ought to join you and leave my church. But if you're not, I want to know. And I want to use the Bible as a test. Now, you can ask a Jehovah's Witness, by the way, did Jehovah's Witnesses, after he explains Deuteronomy 18:21 to you, and be sure he understands it, then say, now all I want to know is, have Jehovah's Witnesses ever predicted anything that didn't happen? And that's where you pull out the white sheet and say, in 1889, you said this. In 1914, you said this. In 1918, you said this. In 1922, you said this. And in 1925, you said that. And we went over it last Monday. So go over it and don't stop. Present one false prophecy after another. And he, at the end, will either be white as a sheet and tears will well up in his eyes, or he will be very irritated with you. You've just upset his comfort zone. He was so sure of God's organization. Don't touch me. In fact, he'll look up Deuteronomy 18:21 and wish it weren't there. He'll look for it and read it fast and close the book and he says, so what? Open it up again. Let's go all over. And then he'll say, oh, that prophecy in 1914, I can explain that. And he'll say, well, we didn't understand too clearly, but Christ really did come in 1914. You just can't see him. Because, see, the word parousia means presence. But then if you want to, you can say, you know, Jesus said, where two or three are gathered together in my name, I'm there also. So we didn't have to wait till 1914 because Christ said he would be with us always, even to the end of the world. So where two or three are gathered together, Christ is there, and we didn't have to wait till 1914. Well, if 1914 was so important, and if in 1914 Christ really did come, as you say, why did you say he was going to come in 1918? Just let him hang there. Don't move. Why did you say he was going to come in 1918? And then why did you say he was going to come in 1925? Evidently, in 1923 and 24, you didn't believe he came in 1914. Now, I want to know, when really did he come? Because you said three times. Now, he's going to say, well, you know, in Proverbs, it says the light grows brighter and brighter even unto the perfect day. Don't let him get away with it. Say, wait a minute, let's go to Proverbs 4:18. Know where that is, because they'll use it. Proverbs 4:18 does not say the truth is going to get truer. Proverbs 4:18 says that a path of a righteous man, a man who does things right, is going to get brighter and brighter to the perfect day. Proverbs 4:18 does not say the light is going to go off and on. Because things that Jehovah's Witnesses believed in 1914, they didn't believe in 1929, and now they believe it again. So the light didn't get brighter and brighter, even if that's what their scripture meant. The truth gets truer. So ask them the question, when they quote that to you, say, will the truth get truer? Is that what you're trying to tell me? Take them right back to the scriptures, and let's see what the scriptures really say. They say that if a man does things right, says things right, even though it might not be advantageous to him to do things right, or it might not seem advantageous, if he keeps doing what is right, it's going to get brighter and brighter and brighter, and finally he's going to see, boy, I'm glad I did it right. I'm glad I followed God's principles. Boy, am I happy now. That's what Proverbs 4:18 says. It doesn't say that you can lie, you can make false prophecies, and that's okay, because someday downstream it's all going to clear up. The other thing I want you to keep in mind as you're talking to a Jehovah's, or I'd like you to keep in mind when you're talking to a Jehovah's Witness, is what Jesus said. He said, look out. They are going to come, false prophets are going to come to you, and aren't they? They knock on our doors, you don't even have to go out and look for them. And he says, look out, because false prophets are going to come to you, and they're going to be dressed in sheep's clothing. They're going to look like sheep. They're going to act like sheep. That is, they're going to look like Christians. And Jehovah's Witnesses are usually nice-looking people with a Bible in their hand. And they say, we're ministers of God. And they call themselves Christians. And so you open up your home and you think you have Christians in your home. But Jesus said, they are ravenous wolves. Now, it's pretty hard to look around the fleece. You know the best place to look? Right down at the feet. Because if it has a split hoof, then you know it's a sheep. But if it's a foot like a wolf, you can tell right away. And you can tell by the footprints. What I'm trying to say, or the point I'm trying to make, is let's get down to the foundation of the doctrines of Jehovah's Witnesses. Rule number XYZ, don't talk about the Trinity. Don't talk about whether hell is hot or cold or wet or dry or electrical. Don't talk about the immortality of the human soul. Don't talk about Christmas. Don't talk about Easter. Don't talk about any of those things, because those aren't his doctrines. Let's go to the foundation of the church, the organization of Jehovah's Witnesses. And what's that foundation? That foundation is that they are God's theocratic organization. If a person believes that, he doesn't need the Bible. He doesn't need your proof of Greek. He doesn't need your Hebrew. He doesn't need anything that you have, because all he has to do is go to God's organization and they provide the food, the meat in due season. Go to the foundation. And their foundation is weak. It's made with salt water. Anybody that makes concrete and mixes salt water with it knows how it's going to crumble. And give it a good lick. And what I'm talking about is show them the false prophecies that you now have. 1 Corinthians, the fifth, and then after this foundation is broken, you will not get anywhere with the true gospel. You will not get anywhere explaining to them the Trinity. You won't get anywhere at all with anything. Because you're just knocking windows out in this building, and he goes right back to the Kingdom Hall, and he's going to get some more new light, and he's going to patch up the window. Get down to the foundation. And you know what I suggest? Don't give away this precious sheet of paper that you have to help them. Listen, your life depends on it. I'm talking about the Jehovah's Witness. Now, if somebody would have whispered to me that there were two editions of Time Is at Hand, somebody would have said, boy, we doctored them up. You know, here it says before 1914, here after, I'd have given you $100 or whatever. Jehovah's Witnesses have another gospel. And what does Galatians 1:6 say? Even if an angel brings you another gospel other than the one already given to you, don't listen to it. Jehovah's Witness, you can ask him where the gospel is recorded and you just lost him. Say, why don't you look up 1 Corinthians the 15th chapter? And let's see what the gospel is that is going to be preached in all the world. Not in the world that started in 1874 or 1914. The world that started back there in Christ's time. And this good news says the gospel has been preached in all the world, not just in the world that we're living in. It has for generations been preached, and it's the same message. Now that will start now to sink in. And then you can show him in John 5:39 that he is studying and studying, and Jehovah's Witnesses, all they do is study and study and study. But Jesus said, look what he said in John, the 5th chapter and the 39th verse. You search the scriptures because you think that in them you have eternal life. And it is they, that is the scriptures, that bear witness to me. Yet you refuse to come to me that you may have life. We get life from Jesus, not from an organization and group of men that I want to tell you about, but we're running out of time. In Acts, the 4th chapter and the 12th verse, it says, no other name under heaven can we gain life, and that name is Jesus. And yet in Isaiah, the 45th chapter and 23rd verse, it says that there is no other name but Jehovah that you can gain life. The only way of salvation is through Jehovah. And yet in the Greek scriptures, it says Jesus is the only one. They have no idea. And if you want to blow their mind real quick, just say Jehovah's Jesus. Wow. They probably would run out of the room. Behind me there's a sign that says, do this in remembrance of me. They say once a year. They just have, right? Do this in remembrance of me once a year. The scriptures say, do this in remembrance of me. And it doesn't matter when. And it seems like the early church did it on the first day of the week. It doesn't matter when you do it. But Jehovah's Witnesses do it once a year and insist on it. And then, in order to partake of the bread and the wine that we call communion, the Lord's evening meal, They say you had to be a Jehovah's Witness before 1935. And in John, the 6th chapter and the 53rd verse, it says, unless you eat the flesh, the bread, and the wine, there is no life in you. And ask the Jehovah's Witness that comes to your house now, because he probably wasn't a Jehovah's Witness in 1935, why he is not partaking of the communion. He says, oh well, that was for people before 1935. Where in the world, or where in the Bible, does it say that if you became a Christian before 1935, you can partake of the bread and wine? If after, you're out of luck. Because those who are going to live on the earth don't need it. They don't need to be born again. The only ones that are born again are the 144,000, and that class ended in 1935. There are about five things that the scriptures tell us about false prophets, and you'll eventually find them all. One is that they're going to have doctrinal error. Do you know Jehovah's Witnesses have two gods? And I wish Dr. Martin would have presented it to me that way 25 years ago. He says, Bill, do you believe in the deity of Christ? And I said, of course. He's a God. But what if he would have said to me, Bill, is Jesus a God? I'd say, oh, yeah. Is Jehovah God? Yes. Well, you've got two gods, Bill, and the Bible says there's only one. So Jehovah's Witnesses have doctrinal error. And 2 Peter tells you that the false prophets, beware of them because they're going to bring in false doctrines. He also said in 1 Timothy 4 that they're going to forbid marriage. And I have a copy of a Watchtower in February of 1938 that says, should they marry? No, is the answer, supported by what? Can you imagine the scriptures? Isn't that warm your heart or tear your heart? How Jesus was able, through his apostles, to pinpoint the false prophets he was talking about? Number two, in Jude, the 16th chapter, he said they're going to be arrogantly proud. Now, Jehovah's Witnesses say that it's wrong for you to have a birthday party for your children. Because when you have a birthday cake and some punch, you are worshiping your children. And you shouldn't worship anyone on earth. Do you know what? Judge Rutherford, very proud, very arrogant, called himself a judge all his life, and he was never elected a judge or appointed a judge. And he wanted the worship for himself. And when I was at the Watchtower headquarters, the joke was still going on. He'd been dead for 10 years. The judge wants it that way. They're going to be rebellious against authority. False prophets are going to be rebellious against authority. 2 Peter 2:10. Jehovah's Witnesses will not salute the flag, will not serve in the armed forces. He misinterpreted Revelation 13 and said the higher power is there. Now look how they do it. They just took the higher powers out and they said, that's Jehovah God in Christ Jesus. See, the higher powers. And therefore, we're God's representatives, so the higher powers is us through Christ Jesus. They changed that in 1960. And my mother-in-law came back from the convention. She says, boy, I hope Bill doesn't hear what they did now. They took the verse where it says, for God so loved the world, and they tried to stick in the word new world. Because they were the ones that were the New World Society, and they were preaching about the New World, and they'd say, and they tried to stick into their translation and to try to get the idea across in 1957 that God said, or what he really meant was that God so loved the New World. How could God love all the unrighteous in this old world? And guess who they gave the assignment to give a talk about it? because they knew how furious I was when I heard they were trying to stick the word new. So they gave me the assignment at the Watchtower headquarters to give a talk on it. And guess how I interpreted it? I said that would be the greatest damage we could do to the scriptures by inserting words that are not in the original. Why I was not excommunicated right there, I still don't know. Jehovah's Witnesses have their own dictionary and definitions. They say, don't salute the flag. Why? Because it's an image. Was the nation of Israel allowed to make images? No. But why did they have flags? See how easy it is when you have the truth? Numbers, the second chapter, Jehovah says each one of you tribes meet at your flag, degel, standard or banner. Now what I want to know is why did your translation take the word flag right out of the Bible? And he substituted for the word flag, degel, three tribe division. Very faithful translators. And last week we proved that the translators who translated the New World Translation, none of them went to college. Franz went a couple of years. The rest of them just, some of them graduated from high school, some of them never went to high school. And the Greek translator, his claim to being a translator was being born in Greece. I sometimes wonder how I ever got into Jehovah's Witnesses. And sometimes I wonder how I ever got out. But it must have been something that the Lord wanted us to do. We don't have too much time, but I want to tell you a little bit about how that happened. It started at the beginning. I was born at a very early age, and pretty soon I was 5 years old, 1935, and my parents were Jehovah's Witnesses. And I thought, boy, my father feeds me and he clothes me. He couldn't be lying to me. I remember he went to a convention in Washington, D.C. And I wanted to go with him so bad, but I guess they had an energy shortage and I didn't get to go. But when he came back, I wanted to hear all about God's theocratic convention, and he mentioned to me a name. And he says, boy, there was a bad man at that convention. His name was Anton Kerber. In fact, he was excommunicated or disfellowshipped. I said, what did he do? My father didn't know. Well, then later, as time went on, I was really interested in Jehovah's Witnesses. I was at every Bible study my father had. He became the presiding minister and sort of a troubleshooter in the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. Started many congregations, and I was there by his side all the time. When he had a sound equipment on his 1937 Ford, we'd go up the top of a hill and we'd play records with Judge Rutherford. I wanted to be right there. That was just sounded like God's voice coming right down and warning the people about Armageddon. And if somebody got married in 1937, boy, leaning to the flesh. Terrible. Having children. In fact, my wife's uncle had a daughter about that time, and he says that was an accident. Just about anything that they did right was an accident. They weren't allowed to have children, weren't allowed to get married, but by accidentally they got married, and accidentally they had children, and accidentally they got through somehow. But boy, if they had kept Watchtower Commandments, they wouldn't have gotten through. Now it's 1947, and I'm graduating from high school. I wanted to become an attorney, but I talked to the president of Jehovah's Witnesses. He said, well, you don't have time to become an attorney. The world's going to end. Wouldn't it be nice to come to the Watchtower headquarters and work in God's theocratic organization? I said, boy, that sure sounds, you know, they had a draft then, and I said, gee, I could solve two problems. I would really find out if this is God's organization. At the same time, I wouldn't have to go to war. So I went to the Watchtower headquarters, and my first job was waiting on tables as a waiter. And pretty soon I was in the circulation department, and pretty soon I was in the service department, which answers Bible questions, appoints ministers for all over the country, sets up circuit assemblies, answers questions like on vaccination, is it right or wrong to vaccinate children? At that time, it was wrong to vaccinate children. I talked about that last Monday. And then one day I get a phone call, and it's the voice of Anton Kerber. All I could remember was how bad this man was. He was kicked out of God's organization, and he's now in his 60s, and he's a millionaire. Became a real estate agent. And now he said, I would like to become a pioneer. So I checked with the Watchtower Society, and they said no. So he was coming into the Watchtower headquarters for me to give him the message. I went down to the lobby, and I says, Anton, do you really love the Lord? Put in as many hours as you possibly can. Serve the Lord out of love. Don't try to get a position. To be called a pioneer is a nice position. When a pioneer walks into the congregation, everybody knows he puts in 100 hours a month, and boy, he must be faithful. He's a little bit better. He says, I want to be a pioneer. And I said, you cannot be a pioneer. God's organization says no. So he stood up, shook hands with me, stepped into the elevator, the doors closed, and I looked, and there was a $10 bill in my hand. I was making $14 a month, cash. So I put the $10 bill in my pocket, went upstairs to the office, and couldn't understand it. Why he wanted to be a pioneer, why he just didn't serve the Lord, and it wouldn't matter what his title was. I go back to 124 Columbia Heights, sit down at the dinner table, and I look around, and he's sitting next to the president of Jehovah's Witnesses, a position of honor. Why, a pioneer could barely get... Why? You'd have to be more than a pioneer to get to sit there. And I nudged my supervisor, T.J. Sullivan. I said, what's going on? He can't be a pioneer, and he's sitting next to the president. And after the dinner, I went upstairs to the lobby, and Anton Kerber sees me. Motions for me to come to the window, and he says, see that Cadillac out there? I gave that to Noor. And he can have another one anytime he wants. You know what? He skipped the lowly pioneer and became a circuit servant in Washington, D.C. That's like an archbishop. Can you imagine Jesus trading a Cadillac? I'd like to become an apostle, Jesus. Would you like a Cadillac? And then, many years later in Los Angeles, when I was talking to the head of the Frank and Ernest radio program, Russell Pollock, I told him the story, and he says, let me add a little to that story. He sent us a check 6 months before for $2,000 so that we could have a meeting with him. So for $2,000, we had a meeting with him. And he said, I will give you $1 million if you will set up an organization ruled theocratically, from the top, just like Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, Jehovah's Witnesses think that the Don are false prophets because they left in 1926 when the world didn't end. They're the evil servant spoken of also in Matthew 24. So Anton Kerber goes to the evil servant, and the evil servant refuses his money, and he goes to the faithful and wise servant, and they take it. And they give him a position. And last summer, after he's been dead now for 4 or 5 years, and after writing an obituary about him, and I don't know of any faithful servants that have ever had an obituary written about them in the watchtower. But I guess Cadillacs and money will do it. And F.W. Franz said there was a very generous, faithful brother. And he mentioned him again years after he was dead. Well, I just had it up as much as I could. And then when Jehovah's Witnesses started to preach that there's no blood transfusion, I saw children die. I saw an airline pilot who had an ulcer operation, and I said, don't sign that paper. We're not, the watchtower here, we're still arguing about whether that's God's law or not. We're allowed to argue at the watchtower headquarters. I argued for 6 years and never got excommunicated because the president said, you can argue about it all you want up here, but when it comes off the sixth floor, you know what's the sixth floor? That's the presses. Once it comes off the sixth floor, it's the truth. We argued about blood transfusion, and the more I argued, the more adamant they became. And in 1958, after I gave the last talk for them in 1958 at Yankee Stadium, Joan and I were married, and we went to her. Her father offered me a job on their farm. I worked there till as a farmer and selling potatoes till 1962. And then two grandparents came over to, drove all the way out from Long Island to our farm, and they said, Bill, we have to ask you a question. We have a granddaughter, and you know her, that's dying. She needs a blood transfusion. What would you do if it were your child? And boy, the sweat just came out on my forehead, because I knew what this meant. I knew that I would be excommunicated very quickly as a heretic if I told her what I really believed. I would lose my job and my children. I had a pair of twins, a year old. My daughter was a couple years older. I would lose my job. I would lose my home. But all I could see was that baby dying. And I thought I compromised, and I said, I would let the doctor decide. They never said thanks. They rushed back to Long Island. 3 days later, I come home from work, and my wife is in tears, and she has a letter in her hand from the Watchtower headquarters for me to appear at a hearing at the Kingdom Hall. And I said, Joan, call every Jehovah's Witness you can get a hold of while I take a shower. She got, this is way out in the country, in the Poconos, and they have approximately 100 Jehovah's Witnesses associated. And you know what? 52 people were there. And the three leaders from Brooklyn were there. And they said, where are these people coming from? And I said, well, they're my witnesses. Oh, you don't need any witnesses. I said, wait a minute. God's theocratic organization says I'm allowed to have witnesses, and these are my witnesses, and it's right in your book. I used to answer their letters, and they're telling me I can't have any witnesses. Well, I showed you the page where I can. They said, oh, well, in this case, your character is not in question. I said, I still need witnesses. I want everybody to know what's going to happen here. They said, well, you're not going to have any witnesses, then you're not going to have a trial. And then, I said, all right, why not let all the witnesses go into this room in the back where they put children, because there's a big glass there. I knew that the room wasn't finished. One wall was missing. They didn't know it because they came from Brooklyn. And they said, fine. So they all got up, walked into the little room, and then I started asking questions. I said, were you telling the truth when you told people it was against God's law to vaccinate in 1950? Was it the truth in 1951 when you said, okay, it's all right to have a vaccination? Was that the truth? Are you married? The Watchtower says, do not marry. Are you married? Is the president of Jehovah's Witnesses married? And about 50 other questions, and they were so upset, their feet were shaking. And you know what? 52 Jehovah's Witnesses left Jehovah's Witnesses on that snowy night in December 1962. My father-in-law invited my wife and I over to his house, and he says, Bill, what are you going to do about what just happened? And I says, well, I have to make a success of marriage. He says, that's not what I'm talking about. What are you going to do about Jehovah's Witnesses? And I says, we were going out the door, Dad, and as we were going out, we were kicked. And I don't think I'm going to come back. Until you can prove to me that it is against God's law to kill children and kill people. Nowhere in the Bible does it say you cannot have a blood transfusion. It says don't drink animal blood. And then Mark, the 7th chapter, says nothing that goes into the mouth defiles a man. Now you show me someplace where it says taking a transfusion is eating blood and that it is wrong to save a life. Jesus even broke the Sabbath law to save a life. David, when he was up on that mountain and he wanted a glass of water, and his bodyguards went in among the Philistines and brought him a glass of water, he poured it out. He says, you want me to drink blood? Was that blood? No, that was water. It is life that is sacred, not blood. So he says, we can pack and leave. I had a beautiful home. I had a good job. Acre of swimming pool, acre of water in front of the house. S.S. Kresge built the house. And you know how he built it? His mother was a Jehovah's Witness. The Kmart people, the 5 and 10 cent store people. And he said, Mom, when is the world going to end? She says, October 1st, 1914. He says, Mom, I'm going to build you a house on that day. And that's the house that Joan and I lived in. And he would visit us once a week, and he would get in his limousine, and just as he would get into it, he'd say, still standing there. And I said, Joan, what's he talking about? He sounds like Jimmy Durante on TV. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Well, he, every time he would get into his car once a week, he'd say, still standing there. Ever since October 1st, 1914. Don't stop visiting the Kmart. Don't stop visiting their 5 and 10s because S.S. Kresge, his son, is a born-again Christian. He always was. He tithes. And he was afraid to tithe because he stopped tithing because he became a millionaire. If you ever want to hear an interesting story, listen to how the Kresge family supports the Christian church. But his mother was a Jehovah's Witness. Well, no job, no house, and I just, well, I said, and her, my wife's father says, and Joan, and you just lost your inheritance, and Joan's father's a millionaire. So I turned to Joan, and I said, Joan, are you willing to eat beans? And she said, yes. Boy, I could have kissed her right there. So we packed But before we did that, I made one phone call. I picked up the phone and called Santa Ana, California, where my brother was, and he was a painting contractor. And I said, Leo, I was just kicked out of Jehovah's Witness. What did you do? And I said, well, I told somebody that that the doctor decide whether that baby should die. And he said, he was a Jehovah's Witness. He said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm not really sure. He said, why don't you come out to Santa Ana? I said, but yeah, what would I do? He says, I'll give you a job. And I said, you'll give me a job? He says, yes, you're still my brother. And we can talk the other thing out. And I said, well, how about Phyllis, your wife? He says, don't worry about her. I'm the head of this house. He might think he's the head. So we packed, and he says, I'll give you $3 and a half an hour to start, because I didn't know which end of the brush to hold. And so I came out. He let us stay in his apartment. And it took 24 hours for my brother to leave Jehovah's Witnesses. It took his wife a little bit longer, about 6 months. And boy, what a rough 6 months. Finally, you know what did it? She was so upset one day, she says, ever since you came from Pennsylvania, it's been nothing but havoc in our home. Your brother is losing his religion. It's been a source of trouble. And I said, Phyllis, you know what? Joan and I, or our children, never received a blood transfusion, and we never gave one. We just said that you didn't break God's law. I didn't take a transfusion. I said, but you gave your poodle a transfusion a few weeks ago, didn't you? Well, that's different. You're allowed to transfuse your poodle. I said, Phyllis, you don't even know your own religion and you're mad at me. I'm telling you that it's against God's law, according to Jehovah's Witnesses, to give your poodle a blood transfusion. You just broke God's law and you're going to second death. She says, that's not true. I said, well, write to the Watchtower. Oh, I wouldn't do that. I said, well, I will. I said, Aunt Tilly, and I gave another address. Dear Watchtower, we have a poodle, and he needed a blood transfusion, and the veterinarian gave him a blood transfusion, and is this against God's law? And am I going to die in the second death? Signed, Aunt Tilly. Dear Aunt Tilly, it is against God's law to give your pet a blood transfusion, and I have the letter right here. Not only is the letter here, but it was printed in the back of a watchtower. So you can lose your life if you let your pet have a blood transfusion. Phyllis says, that's silly. I said, I've been trying to tell you. She says, I said, you know what? I saw a cat in your backyard, your cat, and he caught a mouse. And he ate that whole mouse, lock, stock, and barrel, and he didn't drain the blood. You're going to die again. Second time. She says, oh, the Watchtower doesn't teach that. And I said, dear Watchtower, you know what the answer came back? You're responsible for your pets. Keep them under control. Now I've got to watch my cat so that he doesn't catch a bird and eat him and doesn't drain the blood. And you can lose your life. Jesus told us that these people, this organization, would be ravenous wolves. And he was not kidding. There was a man that just in 1980 20s, walked into the Watchtower Society. He ran away from the military, from the cavalry in New Mexico. He wanted a job. He got a job at the Watchtower headquarters. He finally became a Jehovah's Witness. And he was not allowed to get married. And then when the president of Jehovah's Witnesses got married in 1952, he blew his stack. He's 80 years old, but he still blew his stack. And he went up to the president and he told him that you're a hypocrite. You preach more about love than any man on earth and you practice it the least. And so the president Knorr moved him from his seat in the dining room and stuck him way in a corner. When I first came to the Watchtower headquarters in 1950, President Knorr bragged about this man, Charlie DeWilde, older than all the rest of us, an old man, almost senile, and he was able to stack more books than any man there. But now he's 80, and now he came up to the president of God's Theocratic Organization and pointed out a wrong to him, just like Nathan did to David. And Knorr persecuted him so much that this old senile man took whatever little money he had and walked out of the Watchtower headquarters. And a few months later died on the park bench. He came to me when I was there and he asked me for some money to eat, and I loaned him some, and the president had a letter sent out to all Jehovah's Witnesses not to feed him, not to give him money, to try to force him back in. There were two missionaries that came from Cambodia. I'd learned to like these girls. They were dark-skinned, brilliant minds, didn't know the English language, and we wouldn't hand them bread till they said bread and they finally learned the language. Then they went to our school at Gilead and one of them cracked up. Too much pressure. She started to take off all her clothes and run, trying to commit suicide, jumping off the top of the watchtower. And she came back to the watchtower headquarters and the president said to his transportation secretary, Worth Thornton, get her on the first boat to Cambodia or Indonesia. And when she was only off part of the time, mentally. She only had about an hour out of the 24 that she was really off. And she says, please don't put me on that boat. Can you imagine a girl that's partly senile or partly whatever, taking off her clothes and putting her on a merchant vessel with nothing but sailors? And she begged for her life. She said, don't put me on there because I get the urge to jump off. And the transportation secretary went back to the president. I understand because of what he told me. And he said, put her on that boat. He says, well, at least send another missionary along or put her on an airplane so she could get home safely to her parents. The president said, put her on that boat. So they put her on a train, put her on a boat in San Francisco. When the boat passed Hawaiian Islands, she jumped overboard. And the boat circled two or three times, couldn't find her, and they radiogrammed the Watchtower headquarters. The president of Jehovah's Witnesses has several Cadillacs. He's the most wealthiest man that I know. He has control of every kingdom hall. And he couldn't afford to send this missionary in an airplane so she could get home safely. That's real love. If you would know what I know about Jehovah's Witnesses, you would avoid them like a plague. You would avoid them as far as their doctrines are concerned, exactly like Jesus told you to avoid them. Do not follow them. You're not going to get any truth from them. And just because they say, lo, here is Christ, he says, do not follow them, because when Christ comes, it's going to be like lightning, and everybody's going to know about it, and nobody is going to have to knock on your door and say, hey, do you know that Christ is here? In fact, he already came in 1914.